Okay, folks, we're back in Jeremiah here tonight. Jeremiah chapter 11. Jeremiah chapter 11. Jeremiah chapter 11, I think we left off last time. Terry's been here since we... Terry Thrun's been here since we did this, and then I was gone this last week, so it seems like quite a while since we have been in here. But Jeremiah chapter 11, and we finished last time verse 10, so we'll start with verse 11. Jeremiah chapter 11, verse 11. Therefore thus saith the Lord, behold, I will bring evil upon them, which they shall not be able to escape, and though they shall cry unto me, I will not hearken unto them. Now, he's talking there about Israel. He's talking about his own chosen people, okay? And, folks, Israel remains a monument to the fact that God can preserve somebody through the worst of times. I mean, they're like the burning bush. They burn but are not consumed. But at the same time, folks, it has been a hard, hard existence for Israel. And the reason that's the case is because of their idolatry, right? When you get down to it, I mean, the reason's given in brief back in verse 10, they are turned back to the iniquities of their forefathers, which refused to hear my words. Now, folks, that'll always get you in trouble. What will always get you in trouble is not listening to God, okay? You may not like the voice you hear. You may not like the guy, or for that matter, the gal that the Lord speaks to you through. But you better listen to the voice of God, right? Because the Lord can certainly make existence a burden. In verse 11, therefore thus saith the Lord, behold, I will bring evil upon them, which they shall not be able to escape. We're pretty pitiful in that, you know, we act all indomitable and kind of like, you know, when things are going right, like nothing can take us down. Well, just about anything can take you down. You just, you know, turn your ankle wrong and fall up against something and, you know, you're out. You know, Tim's, I didn't think about you, Tim, but Tim took a fall here not too long ago. And, you know, we're just pretty weak, pitiful little worms, aren't we? Just doesn't take very much for the Lord to do something, I mean, extraordinary in our lives. And, folks, you don't want to be in that position. Israel is hemmed in. They're in a case, even right now, politically, where they can't win. How would you like to be a politician in Israel? What are you going to say do? You know, you say, well, nuke them up. Just nuke them. Well, yeah, you send your nukes off, and then what? Right? But, I mean, God's got them in a position where God has to deliver them. And that's what he's going to do. But their travails aren't over yet, are they? Verse 11. I will bring evil upon them, which they shall not be able to escape. And though they shall cry unto me, I will not hearken unto them. And that's something else. That's another place you don't want to get. Folks, you don't want to get where when you cry to God, God says, I ain't interested. That's not what you want. Okay? Now, we'll talk a little bit more about it in a minute, but it's certainly possible for you to go there. Look in verse 12. Then shall the cities of Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem go, and I cry unto the gods unto whom they offer incense, but they shall not save them at all in the time of their trouble. And in the end, you know, in the end, your false gods do no good for you at all. At all. Period. Verse 13. For according to the number of thy cities were thy gods, O Judah. For every city there was a different god. And according to the number of the streets of Jerusalem have ye set up altars to that shameful thing, even altars to burn incense unto Baal. Okay, what is that shameful thing? He's talking about multiple gods back in verse 3. According to the number of thy cities where thy gods, O Judah, according to the number of streets of Jerusalem, have you set up altars, gods, plural, altars, plural, that shameful thing, singular. Go on, even altars to burn incense unto Baal. You know what it means? I think in the end, all gods are the same. They're nothing. Okay? I mean, you pick any god you want to pick. You can go, you can be a Muslim, you can be a Buddhist, you can be a Confucianist. You can be what you want to be, and in the end, it all equals the same thing. They're all nothing. They're shameful. It's a shameful thing. It's all the devil's trick. It's just different names, but it's all the same stuff. It's just idolatry. It's just falsehood. And it's a shame. And so he says down in verse 13, they have set up altars to that shameful thing, even altars to burn incense unto Baal. And in the end, you can basically wrap up all the false gods as just being Baal. Just false god. Verse 14, therefore, pray not thou for this people, neither lift up a cry or a prayer for them. Now, he's prophesying here. The Lord's telling Jeremiah at this point of judgment, not to pray for them. And we are told to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, okay? And I do pray for Jews. I do pray for the land of Israel, okay? I'm not Jeremiah, and this is not the day. But at the same time, what you do need to see there is there comes a point where God's not interested in hearing prayer anymore. Okay, you can get that far. Look in Proverbs chapter 1 real quick. Proverbs chapter 1. And the Lord is just not nearly as much a Santa Claus as people like to make him these days. He's just not nearly as easy and smooth and tender as folks would like him to be. Now, I have no question about his mercy or his tenderness or his long-suffering. All of us here would be able to testify that God is merciful and tender, right? But you look around a little bit, you can also see that when God's fed up, God's fed up. And you don't want to go there, right? Look in Proverbs 1, and then verse 28. Then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. For that they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would none of my counsel and despised all my reproof. Now, there's some wording in there. They would none of my counsel. They don't want any of it. And they despised all my reproof. You've come to a day now where anything that's negative that's said is not godly. The preacher in Montana, there's a lady that was there. I think she was a fringe lady. And it wasn't even me that made her mad. But the other preacher that was there for a couple days, he got up one night and he actually preached on money. And they had to deal for a couple days with this lady that was upset because he did that, because she came to church to be edified, not to be preached to about money. Okay? Well, you know what? That's the wrong way to go to church, right? But it says that they despise all my reproof. Therefore shall they eat it through their own way and be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. And it becomes real plain that the Lord comes up to a point where he will not listen. Look back to verse 26. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as a desolation and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish cometh upon you. All right, back to Jeremiah chapter 11. Jeremiah chapter 11. And go down to verse 14. Therefore, pray not thou for this people. Jeremiah's not supposed to pray for them at this point. Neither lift up a cry or prayer for them. For I will not hear them in the time that they cry unto me for their trouble. Verse 15. What hath my beloved to do in mine house, seeing she hath wrought lewdness with many, and the holy flesh is passed from thee? and go look up that holy flesh. And, of course, those certain sacrifices that the priests made, certain of those sacrifices, the sin offering, for example, in, I believe it's Leviticus 6, you know, for a certain period of time after that sacrifice was offered, the priest was to eat that sin offering, but the next morning, they were not to eat of it anymore. Okay, it was holy flesh. And the idea here is that what, you know, God's things, God's holy things, and those priests, you know, finally got to the day, and you know that, you know, Eli's sons, you know, were just messing around with it and defiling women, you know, that came to the tabernacle and everything else. It just became despicable. Look at Malachi chapter 1. And I just say that to say, not that we're under law or anything like that, but the things of God are just as holy for you, perhaps holier for you than they were for the priests. And we can become as ambivalent and flippant about them as they were. Look in Malachi chapter 1, verse 6. Malachi 1, 6. We've got to guard against these things, folks, especially in this day, right? Malachi 1, 6. The son honoreth his father, a servant his master. If then I be a father, where is mine honor? And if I be a master, where is my fear? Saith the Lord of hosts unto you, O priests, that despise my name, and ye say, wherein have we despised thy name? Kind of a smart alecky thing, don't you think? You despise, wherein have we despised thy name? Right? Verse 7, ye offer polluted bread upon mine altar. And of course, again, this doesn't apply to us in a strict sense because we're not under Levitical law, and thank God we're not. But ye offer polluted bread upon mine altar, and ye say, wherein have we polluted thee? In that ye say, the table of the Lord is contemptible. And if ye offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? If ye offer the lame and sick, is it not evil? See, they were just bringing in the old thing after a while. If you're not careful after a while, you just come to church flippantly. Remember how it was when you first started coming? Remember how it was when you first got saved, and you first got right, and you just had a sense that when you came, that you were dealing with holy things. It was all fresh and new, and the Spirit of God was here, and you know it was just wonderful. And you never were going to backslide, were you? Now you get up and slog to church, have a fight with the wife on the way to church. A little bit of everything happens, right? Now, folks, I'm not saying it's all in a feeling, and I'm not saying everybody doesn't deserve a bad day once in a while, but you've got to be careful about how you come. Because there's holy things that you deal with. We have this treasure in earthen vessels. It's supposed to mean something today as well as tomorrow and the next day, and not just on Sunday, but certainly on Sunday too, right? Look at Malachi 1:12. But ye have profaned it, in that ye say the table of the Lord is polluted, and the fruit thereof, even his meat, is contemptible. Ye said also, behold, what a weariness is it. How come you weren't at church Sunday? I'm tired. What a weariness is it. I get so tired of visitation. I get so tired of knocking doors and nobody gets saved. We went, you know, I'll give you, I don't know if this is encouragement to you or not. We went street preaching in Missoula on Saturday. And you know what? It's just like here. The little town of Missoula also happens to be a very liberal spot, probably the most liberal spot in Montana, because they have the University of Montana there, the Grizzlies, and so it's a university town. There's 80,000 people in town, and there's a university there of 15 or 20,000 kids, and so you know you have the whole, you know, earring, tattoo, dreadlocks complex going there, you know, just like you do here. And we went down and passed out tracts and street preached and held signs and all that stuff. And people's reactions, you would have not been able to tell the difference between here and there. Is that supposed to encourage you? Well, I don't know. I hope it would. Sometimes you probably think, well, it's not like this everywhere. It's like that a lot of places. You know? And you have to be careful lest that becomes a weariness to you. And yet you weary of bearing the Lord's burden for the Lord's things. Because God gave you that burden. Okay, you have a commission? You called to be a witness? Okay? Then bear it. Okay? Back to verse 13, he said also, behold, what a weariness is it? And ye have snuffed at it. Snuffed. Went a visitation today. Why should I? Want to go street preaching? Nah. They don't listen anyway. Right? If it'll, if you develop that attitude about street preaching and visitation, you'll also develop that attitude about prayer. And then you'll develop that attitude about Bible reading. You'll develop that attitude about church. You ready to go to church? Bunch of hypocrites. Right? Be careful. Be weary. Snuff at it. Snuff at it. Ye have snuffed at it, saith the Lord of hosts, and ye brought that which was torn, and the lame and the sick. Thus she brought an offering. Should I accept this of your hand, saith the Lord? You know, once in a while it's worthwhile to be reminded, you know, we take an offering here. It's obviously not the same thing as a lamb or a bullock or something like that. But, you know, you are giving it to the Lord, right? That's what you always say. Well, do it heartily. Get to give something back to God. It beats giving it to the IRS. Okay, it beats giving it to a liquor store you used to give it to. You were happy to give it to a liquor store, right? Can't you happily give it to the Lord? All right, back to Jeremiah chapter 11. Jeremiah chapter 11, verse 15. What hath my beloved to do in mine house, seeing that she hath wrought lewdness with many? It's the equivalent, the Lord is in the Lord's mind, of a woman committing adultery in her husband's own house. The holy flesh is passed from thee. When thou doest evil, then thou rejoicest. The Lord called thy name a green olive tree, fair and of goodly fruit. Okay, she's the green olive tree, all right? Our part in all that's found in Romans chapter 11, folks. Turn to Romans 11. And like I said, you may, if you ever wonder why I believe that one of the keys, you know, the key things of our faith, it's not the same as eternal security and stuff, but just as far as keeping your heart on the side of the Israelites, of the Israelis, of Israel, I think it's important, folks, because everything that you have spiritually has come through them. At least they had opportunity for it first, and when they turned it down, you were grafted in. Okay, look, Romans chapter 11, verse 16. For if the first fruit be holy, the lump is also holy. And if the root be holy, so are the branches. And if some of the branches be broken off. Now, this is Israel. And thou, being a wild olive tree. Now, see there, back here in Jeremiah, they're a good olive tree, a green olive tree. And they were a, in God's sight, He planted them, and they were a domesticated, good olive tree. You were a wild olive tree, something that grew out in the middle of somewhere, and the Lord grafted you in. Look in verse 17. Some of the branches be broken off, and thou, being a wild olive tree, wert grafted in among them, and with them partakest of the root and fatness of the olive tree. Boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. And the idea is, weren't for them, you have no source of life. You were cut down out there and grafted in. You know, some of their branches were cut off and then split, and then the end of your branch was carved down to a point, and you were grafted in so that you receive your nourishment through Jewish roots. You've got a Jewish Savior. And everything that you have right now in the way of spiritual blessings came to you because they rejected Jesus Christ, and so the Lord said, well, that root might as well bear something decent for 2,000 years, and He grafted you in. Okay? So if you wonder why I say something like, I voted my last time for somebody that's willing to give more land away, with Israel? That's why. Because, folks, I am. Insofar as possible, I have voted my last time for somebody that's willing to, that wants to give away more land. Because I can't justify it in my own conscience. Okay, those are God's people. And they're idolatrous, and they're not a holy nation right now by any stretch. They have gay parades. It's just like Miami in the Middle East. I understand that. I understand that. Nevertheless, if they go to war, I'm supporting them. Okay? If they decide to nuke Iran, I'm going to get a little Israeli flag and wave it. And the only reason I have a problem with it is because there's a stinking star of Molech on it. Okay? But seriously, folks, they bear us, and God's eyes are on them. Christ's eyes are on us, but God's eyes are on them. Goes on down here in verse, let's just go on in verse 20. Well, because of unbelief they were broken off, and thou standest by faith, be not high-minded, but fear. And folks, a bunch of the liberals and the radio preachers try to make this you're losing your salvation. That's not it at all. It's talking about nations here. And America was grafted in on a national basis. And because of her relation to Christ through the Bible, she has gained a lot of blessings from Israel. But she's on the brink of being cut off. And that's why I'm concerned. In verse 22, behold, therefore, the goodness and severity of God on them which fell, severity, but toward thee, goodness. If thou continue in his goodness, otherwise thou shalt be cut off. And if they also, or rather, and they also, if they abide not still in unbelief, shall be grafted in. For God is able to graft them in again. For if thou wert cut out of the olive tree, which is wild by nature, and wert grafted contrary to nature into a good olive tree, how much more shall these which be the natural branches be grafted into their own olive tree? And that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. All right, back to Jeremiah 11. Jeremiah 11, verse 16. The Lord called thy name a green olive tree, fair and of goodly fruit. With the noise of a great tumult, he hath kindled fire upon it, and the branches of it are broken. Hey, it's a blessing, because those branches that got broken, we got grafted in their spot. Kind of cool. That's what it said in Romans 11. Verse 17, go tell a Jew that. He'll have a cow. He'll have a hernia right on the spot. Verse 17, for the Lord of hosts that planted thee hath pronounced evil against thee, for the evil of the house of Israel and of the house of Judah, which they have done against themselves to provoke me to anger and offering incense unto Baal. You learn a little something there in verse 17. You know, people sin and do wrong and commit idolatry for large, many times just for self, for selfish reasons, right? What you're taught there, just in the wording in verse 17, notice, they have done against themselves. When you commit idolatry, when you sin, in fact, when you sin in general, you're committing that against yourself. It does nothing but hurt you. Right? Verse 18, and the Lord hath given me knowledge of it, and I know it. Then thou showedest me their doings. But I was like a lamb or an ox that is brought to the slaughter, and I knew not that they had devised devices against me. See the process here? The Lord gave me knowledge. The Lord showed me this stuff. But I didn't know what was going to come, because when they discovered that I was going to tell you, that I was going to tell them what God told me to say, then they devised devices against me. I was like a lamb brought to the slaughter. That's what you were when you first got saved. You thought you were going to go talk to your mama, and that she was going to be just so happy that you got saved and that she would want what you have. And you found out it didn't work that way. Usually, maybe it did for you. But usually it doesn't, right? You feel almost blindsided when you take the gospel to your lost family. And, you know, after all, I received it. Why wouldn't they want to receive it? Right? But they weren't quite so happy, were they? Verse 19. I knew not that they had devised devices against me, saying, let us destroy the tree, talking about him, with the fruit thereof, and let us cut him off from the land of the living, and kill him, that his name may be no more remembered. But, O Lord of hosts, that judgest righteously, that triest the reins and the heart, let me see thy vengeance on them, for unto thee have I revealed my cause. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of the men of Anathoth. Now, these men are where Jeremiah is from. Go to Jeremiah chapter 1 real quick. Jeremiah is from Anathoth, and we are reminded that a prophet hath not honor in his own country and among his own kin, right? Even Jesus Christ's brothers and sisters, we know that there were a couple of brothers that got saved. Jude, the book of Jude, of the book of Jude, is the Judas, one of Jesus' brothers. Okay? He had a couple of brothers that got saved. We don't know whether Simeon got saved or not, one of Jesus' brothers. We don't know about his sisters, okay? And you imagine growing up with Jesus Christ and then going to hell? Would be something. But a prophet's not without honor except in his own country and among his own kin. So it's always hard to go back to where you're from. I don't know if you know it or not, but Mark Engelbert is from the same area that my wife is from over in Door County. And he is in Door County trying to keep a church going. It is a hard road, brother. It's a hard road. But Jeremiah 1:1, the words of Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiah, of the priests that were in Anathoth in the land of Benjamin. That's where he's from. And let me show you. There's one more verse that I wanted to show you with regard to that. Look at 29:27. Jeremiah 29:27. Now, therefore, why hast thou not reproved Jeremiah of Anathoth? Okay, so he's prophesying to the people of Anathoth, and they don't like it very much. They're ready to kill him. Jeremiah chapter 11, verse 12, 21. Have I mentioned to you that I'm glad I'm no longer in Sumner, Texas? Did I mention that? Am I ever glad I didn't get called back there? My grandfather tried to get me to come back. He said, you can pastor church here. I'll give you some land to build a house. I don't want to go back there. I left there for a reason. I don't want to go back there. Verse 21, therefore thus saith the Lord of the men of Anathoth that seek thy life, saying, prophesy not in the name of the Lord, that thou die not by our hand. Open threat. You keep prophesying. We'll kill you. Therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, I will punish them. The young men shall die by the sword, their sons and their daughters shall die by famine. And there shall be no remnant of them, for I will bring evil upon the men of Anathoth, even the year of their visitation. Remember Moses marries the priest of Midian's daughter, right? And they're out there, and that whole thing with Peor happens. And remember Phinehas goes in and slays the adulteress along with the adulterer and all that kind of thing. You know what the Lord said then? He said, go make war with Midian. Here's Moses sitting there. His father-in-law is a Midianite. His wife is a Midianite. Called to do that. Tough, man. All right, 12:1. Okay, that's good. Righteous art thou, O Lord, when I plead with thee. Yet let me talk with thee of thy judgments. Ever read that carefully? You know, the Lord says, God, I know that you're righteous, but let me talk to you about how you do things. Look in Psalm 119 real quick. You see the kind of the opposite of this. Psalm 119. And look at 137, 119, 137. This is a guy that's probably not under fire and doesn't have anything bothering him. So he says, 119, 137, righteous art thou, O Lord, and upright are thy judgments. Okay? You're righteous and your judgments are right. And I've esteemed all that precept concerning all things to be right. And it's all good. Well, Jeremiah is a spiritual man, right? And he comes to a day where he says, "Righteous art thou, O Lord," in Jeremiah 12:1. "When I plead with thee, yet let me talk with thee of thy judgments." Can we talk, God? I know you're right, but could we talk? He says, "Wherefore doth the way of the wicked prosper? Wherefore are all they happy that deal very treacherously?" Why does the Lord allow a scumbag like Osama Obama to be promoted to the point that he has been promoted? Has he ever done anything besides go to school? He has 143 days of Senate experience. Why does the Lord let something like that happen? Why does he let somebody prosper like that? He says, "Wherefore doth the way of the wicked prosper?" You know, another dirtbag is Hugh Hefner. Why isn't he laying around screaming in a bed in mortal agony or something? He deserves it. Right? You know what I'm saying? And Jeremiah's confused by it. He says, "Listen, I know you're righteous, Lord, but let me talk to you about thy judgments, all right?" Look in Job 21. It says, "Bothered the best of men, and it'll bother you before it's all over with. I know that you know that the Lord's going to take care of things in time. I know that. But I also know that there are times that when things get right down to it, it's really hard to take that it seems like wicked men get away with it." Right? It just looks that way. Job 21:7. "Wherefore do the wicked live? Become old, yea, or mighty in power. Their seed is established in their sight with them, their offspring before their eyes. Their houses are safe from fear, neither is the rod of God upon them. Their bull gendereth and faileth not, their cow calveth and casteth not a calf. They send forth their little ones like a flock, and their children dance. They take the timbrel and harp and rejoice at the sound of the organ. They spend their days in wealth, and in a moment go down to the grave." They don't even suffer in their death. Just die quietly in their sleep. This doesn't seem right. Right? I mean, that's the way we think, right? And some of you would like to be able to see the issues of righteousness and wickedness repaid a little bit here in this life so that folks would know, so that folks could see, wouldn't you? Well, folks, the definitive answer for all this, and, you know, he says in Matthew 5 that it rains on the just and the unjust alike, okay? But the real key, the real answer is over in Psalm 73. And the fact is that there are some things that you're not going to see in this life. In Psalm 73, verse 1, we've been through this before, "But truly God is good to Israel, even such as are of a clean heart. But as for me, my feet were almost gone. My steps had well nigh slipped." Psalm 73:3. "For I was envious at the foolish when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." And that's what will get you. You'll wind up envying somebody that's a fool because you see them and they seem to prosper in a way that you don't prosper. And in verse 4, "For there are no bands in their death, but their strength is firm. They are not in trouble as other men. Neither are they plagued like other men. Therefore pride compasseth them about as a chain, violence covereth them as a garment. Their eyes stand out with fatness. They are they have more than heart could wish. They are corrupt and speak wickedly. Concerning oppression, they speak loftily. They set their mouth against the heavens. Their tongue walketh through the earth." You know, sometimes I hear stuff on the radio. Why can't God just gag somebody on the spot? Ever wish that somebody spouting off their big fat mouth about some ungodly thing, that God would just cut off their air? You know, don't you wish something like that happened once in a while? Maybe people would speak more carefully. Nah, I guess I'm just wicked, huh? Verse 10. Therefore his people return thither, and waters of a full cup are wrung out to them. They say, how doth God know? And is there knowledge in the Most High? Behold, these are the ungodly who prosper in the world. They increase in riches. Verily, I have cleansed my heart in vain and washed my hands in innocency. I mean, he's saying there in verse 13, try to do right, and it's all been in vain. You ever feel that way? You know, I've done right, done right, done right, done right. Seems like it doesn't get me anywhere. Well, verse 14. For all the day long have I been plagued and chastened every morning. They get by, it seems like sometimes, they get by with wretchedness. And I step out of line and I get a whooping. Right? All right, verse 15. If I say I will speak thus, behold, I should offend against the generation of thy children. When I thought to know this, it was too painful for me. And then an interesting turn here. Verse 17, and I know, folks, look, I don't believe you're sitting in the sanctuary right now. I believe you are the sanctuary. Your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost, right? But still, there's an application. Look in verse 17. Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then understood I therein. You get more understanding in the Word of God and prayer and in church than you will anywhere else. Surely thou didst set them in slippery places, thou castest them down into destruction. It doesn't matter how prosperously you live and how easily you die if you land in a lake of fire. Right? How are they brought into desolation as in a moment they are utterly consumed with terrors? You ever think about that? Ever think that you don't actually see what goes on in their minds and hearts at 2 in the morning? As they lay awake on their bed and have fears that you don't have? Ever think about that? Verse 20, as a dream, when one awaketh, so, O Lord, when thou awakest, thou shalt despise their image. Thus my heart was grieved, and I was pricked to my reins. So foolish was I and ignorant, I was as a beast before thee. And he's saying now, he said, all that time I was envying them, I was like a mule. I was just beastly, just brutish. My understanding. Because the way of the righteous is right. So it goes on, Jeremiah 12, verse 1. Jeremiah 12:1, righteous art thou, O Lord, when I plead with thee, yet let me talk with thee of thy judgments. Wherefore doth the way of the wicked prosper? We are told to walk in the way of the Lord, and that the way of man is the wrong way, and it seems like a lot of times the folks that walk that way prosper. That's what bothers you, right? Wherefore doth the way of the wicked prosper? Wherefore are all they happy that deal very treacherously? It's their happiness and their prosperity that bugs you. They look so prosperous. They look so happy. It's keeping up with the Joneses. It's their stuff. They're prosperous. And they seem happy. But Psalm 73 says that inside they're not. Now, folks, you have to believe that. You have to cling to that. Verse 2, 12:2. Thou hast planted them, yea, they have taken root. They grow, yea, they bring forth fruit. Thou art near in their mouth, but far from their reins. Now, look in verse 2. It says, thou hast planted them. Did he plant them? Did he plant them? Matthew 15. Did he plant them? Matthew 15. Did God plant the wicked? Matthew 15. Matthew 15. Go down to verse 11. And not that which goeth into the mouth defileth a man, but that which cometh out of the mouth, this defileth a man. Then came his disciples and said unto him, knowest thou that the Pharisees were offended after they heard these things? But he answered and said, every plant which my heavenly Father hath not planted shall be rooted up. Implying, of course, that those Pharisees were not planted by the Lord. Right? They're going to get rooted up. If you doubt it, look in Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter Let me see if this is it. Yes, the parable of the tares and of the field. In verse 37, he answered and said unto them, He that soweth the good seed is the Son of Man. Field is the world, the good seed are the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the children of the wicked one. The enemy that sowed them is the devil. Okay? All right. Then the wicked, God didn't sow the wicked. Jeremiah is presuming that, but that's not who sowed the wicked. Jeremiah chapter 12, verse 2, Thou hast planted them, yea, they have taken root. They grow, yea, they spring, bring forth fruit. Thou art near in their mouth and far from their reins. Anybody can talk. And thou, O Lord, knowest me, thou hast seen me, and tried mine heart toward thee. And folks, that's what a lot of the Christian life is about. That's what a lot of the trouble that you see is about. It's the Lord trying your heart toward him. Okay? A lot of stuff goes, sometimes the Lord will let something, sometimes the Lord will cause something to go wrong, just to try your heart towards him. That's what the whole of Job is about, right? Job getting his heart tried toward God. I'm ashamed to say how badly I fail at that thing. Aren't you? Verse 3. But thou, O Lord, knowest me. Thou hast seen me and tried mine heart toward thee. Pull them out like sheep for the slaughter and prepare them for the day of slaughter. No, that's straightforward. How long shall the land mourn and the herbs of every field wither for the wickedness of them that dwell therein? The beasts are consumed, the bird and the birds, because they said, He shall not see our last end. And so, I better stop. I'm going to get into something that I won't be able to finish if I embark. Any questions or comments? Go ahead, Steve.